Frank Watson is a poet, and he's gained notoriety in the art of micropoetry. He's just released a new book of micropoetry called Seas to Mulberries, and it's my pleasure to introduce Frank Watson, and he's joining us on the phone from New York City. Welcome, Frank, to Around Cincinnati.
Hi, nice to be here.
When did you begin writing poetry?
I began writing probably 20 years ago in college, but I sort of took a break for a while after I graduated, and I really got back into it in the last 5 years or so.
You've got sort of a, well, not sort of, it is an interesting background and relationship, I should say, with poetry, because you got involved with Japanese and Chinese, I guess you could use the word ancient poetry. Tell us a little bit about that diversion.
That's actually how I got back into writing my own poetry, was through work in translating ancient Japanese and Chinese poetry. During college, I studied classical Japanese and Chinese literature. And even after I graduated, I sort of retained an interest in that and would read different works. And I started coming across more and more work by classical poets such as Basho, who's one of the great Japanese haiku masters. Reading the translations really got me interested in how it worked in the original language, because a translation always loses something when you're doing it versus the original. You just can never really get the same sense in terms of sound and rhythm that you have in the original language. But the images were so fascinating that I wanted to really dig into it, and the best way to do that is through the original. So I started studying Japanese for a few years and eventually got to the point where I was fairly fluent in speaking broken Japanese. So I could speak at a fairly rapid pace, but with limited grammar and limited vocabulary. But nonetheless, it enabled me to travel around Japan without a phrase book and talk to people and have conversations and things like that. So I found that really interesting as a way of digging into the roots of the culture. After I started translating Basho, and I saw the positive reception on Twitter to my translations of this work, and then I started digging into other poets, classical Chinese poets, and I came across an ancient Japanese poetry anthology called the Hyakumin Ishu, which is basically one poem, each one by a different poet. And that's so ingrained in Japanese culture that people turned it into a card game. Children play this, and a lot of people, maybe a good portion of the population, have actually memorized those poems. So you can see kind of the different level of influence poetry has had on Japanese culture versus, say, American culture, where maybe poetry is not quite so ingrained in our culture. Once I started going into that, I started translating those poems, and I thought, well, I'm enjoying this a lot. I'm getting through each of these poems pretty fast. Before I knew it, I had translated all 100 of those poems, and that led to a book that I published called 100 Leaves, which is basically a translation of the original Japanese poems that also has color art etchings that are related to each and every one of those poems. So it has 100 pictures and 100 poems plus pronunciation and notes that give you more insight into the poems.
I'm glad you shared that story, because it really does set up what you're doing now. And I'd love to talk a bit about this phenomenon of micro poetry. My question was, what came first, micro poetry or Twitter? Because I know it's a big thing and there are contests, and I want to be sure that you share some resources with our listeners if they're interested in the micro poetry and also it's the sharing of it on Twitter. But speak to that, because that's where you've really found an audience, is in the Twitterverse.
Yes, I think this is really the area where poetry is flourishing in modern society, is because the beauty of doing poetry on Twitter is that it becomes more of a social form, in that you write a poem, you get immediate feedback. Sometimes people will write a poem in response to you, and then you'll write a poem back in response. And so it really becomes a way of having an artistic conversation with people all across the world. And I didn't realize it at first, but when I started getting to know some of the fans that develop on Twitter, it turns out that maybe half of them are from other countries. So you find lots of people from India, Australia, Europe, within Europe, people from Germany, France, England. It's just amazing how useful Twitter is for sharing all that stuff. And this sort of actually takes the form of poetry in a way beyond the level where it started in classical Japanese and Chinese poetry, where in those cultures it was actually a fairly social form. And haiku, you could argue, is a form of micro-poetry in that it's three lines and it generally will fit within Twitter's limit. In classical or ancient Japanese tradition, people would write haiku to each other when they were visiting someone's house or when someone was partying, or they would go to a drinking party and they would all write haiku to each other and just sort of bounce ideas off of each other. And it was quite similar in the Chinese Tang Dynasty, which was around 700 to 900 AD, where during that 200-year period, there still remained over 40,000 poems that you can have access to now. And that was really when the great flourishing of Chinese poetry occurred, around 700 to 900 AD. In those situations, too, it was highly social. Every time somebody would visit someone's house, they would write a poem. When they leave, they write another poem. When they visited the king, they would do it. When they were sent off to another land, they would write a poem. What I like about Twitter is it really takes the social power of poetry and it lets you share it with anybody around the world who's interested in that. And I think it's really a great tool for both poets and for people interested in reading poetry.
I think that your poetry, these micro poems, people experience poetry based on their life experiences. And yours is a wonderful way for people, I think, to get into poetry if they haven't gone down that route, because it's very accessible and it isn't overwhelming. And there's just some beautiful, beautiful thoughts captured in your work. I'd really encourage folks to go to our website, wvxu.org, for more information about Seas to Mulberries, which is from an old Japanese poem. I understand that you do have a few of your translated work, Japanese and Chinese translated poems, in the back of Seas to Mulberries, which is really a nice touch. Frank Watson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
He's a poet with a new book called Seas to Mulberries. For Around Cincinnati, this is Robin Carey-Allgaier.